Hey, email geeks, welcome into the Email Design Podcast, where we talk about all things email design and development. We geek out about it, and we're going to be geeking out hardcore today because we're going to try to put our minds into the crystal ball and figure out what exactly is going to happen in the email world for this year of 2017. So, Jason, let's kick off. Let's start talking about some trends.
Some trends, yeah, some good trends. Hopefully, we've done this before. We've kind of made some predictions about the email industry. Sometimes they hold true, and sometimes we have to, bite the bullet and admit that we were wrong. But we have a couple that we want to throw at you guys and kind of track them over the next year and see how we fare this time.
We're just going to throw stuff at the wall here.
Yeah, and see what sticks. So the first one I want to talk about, I think this one. I think it's pretty clear that this is going to be an increasing trend, not just for 2017, but for years to come. And that's the increase in interactive emails. So this is something we've seen slowly growing over the past couple of years as these interactive techniques have been worked out. So things like, even just basic image carousels, just interactive animations and stuff using CSS animations, to more complex stuff like the folks at Rebel Mail have been doing with it, the whole checkout experience in an email. They had their recent API, which is really, really cool, they released that makes it easier for people to use those kind of tools. So I think this is going to be something that we see more and more of. And I think it's something that was very clear we saw more of over this past holiday season. I feel like I saw more of these interactive email campaigns, not just from, small bespoke little shops or agencies, but from some bigger retailers, too. We saw that interactive advent calendar for, I think it was American Express, which is pretty huge. Taco Bell does some really great things that with interactive email. So I think that's going to be a trend that a lot more people are going to start jumping on to because these techniques are getting ironed out. The tooling is getting a little bit better, especially if you use something like Rebel Mail and their API. Like, they make it very, very easy to add these interactive elements to your emails. So I think we can definitely expect in 2017, years beyond, seeing more and more interactive emails and really interesting user experiences in email, which will be really cool to watch.
Do you think it's going to sort of stay limited into the retailer, e-commerce, or B2C industry?
I think for the most part it will. I hope we see some kind of B2B stuff. I expect we'll see some cool things from software companies similar to, we've done things in the past and we're totally B2B. But though that kind of like interactive tour type element in emails for these product features, stuff like that, I think we'll see a little bit more of. But yeah, I think for the most part, it's going to be much more focused on retail, which I think is that's how it kind of goes. That's where a lot of the money being driven is into email. So that's where we're going to see these first steps taken.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think people are definitely interested in it. I think there's still there's not enough sort of case studies or analytics out there behind the effectiveness on the behind these techniques to really, I think, hit the masses. But I think people are definitely intrigued and interested and want to try it out. And I think the hardest part is just always finding a really good use case in terms of. And at least in terms of interactivity being focal points, like it's easy to do design experiences with it, right? When we've talked about emails in the past about an interactive Christmas tree or something where it's not necessarily a focal point of the email, but it's a little design element here or there that you could incorporate for brands. I mean, I think for us, Jason, the only email we've ever really done a focal point was when we launched Litmus Builder and we did a interactive product tour in the email. So I think it is. I would definitely love to see more of the checkout stuff because I do think there are just sort of limitations around, well, how many carousels can you do or certain things like that really leads to effectiveness.
Yep.
So I'm interested to see if we can make sort of trends that way.
Yeah. I think that's one of my fears too is, we've all seen the kind of big boom in carousels on websites. And just the huge negative reaction to those after everybody had a carousel on their website, and I don't want to see that same thing happen in email. But I totally agree. Hopefully we can have people figure out some better use cases, better applications for interactivity. But I definitely think we'll see a large pickup in the campaigns that we see in our inboxes that include those interactive elements, which will be pretty cool. All right, the next one I kind of want to talk about is this issue of accessibility, which we've been talking about more and more. We actually have a community contest on the Litmus community going on to build a really cool accessible email. Most notably, our last email newsletter from Litmus, we had a focus on accessibility. That kind of went hand in hand with experimenting with not inlining our CSS. So I think we're talking about it more, but I think one trend is going to be that people continue to ignore accessibility. I think, you know, we've talked about how the email industry kind of follows the trend of the web world. We just do it lagging a couple of years behind. And it, still today in the web world, you know, accessibility is more and more important, but a lot of developers, a lot of companies just don't even care about it. It's an afterthought if they even think about it at all. And I think that, unfortunately, that's going to continue in the email world as well. But there are people talking about it, which is really good. You know, the thing that's crazy when people ignore it is that a lot of the tricks to actually use these make your emails more accessible are really, really easy fixes for your email templates, you know. So I'm hoping that's not the case. I'm hoping that people take accessibility more seriously in email and they continue to try to create really accessible email campaigns. But I think for most people, they're going to look at it and just kind of throw it to the side. So I think that ignoring accessibility, regardless of how much we talk about it, is going to be an unfortunate trend of 2017.
Yeah, we need the industry needs to start really focusing in on semantic markup. Mm-hmm. And
I feel somewhat at fault because for a long time I, you know, kind of argued against it too, as most people did, thinking it was more work to, you know, use semantic elements and override some of those style rules that clients apply by default, than to just use table cells for anything, you know. For a long time, what was that tagline, that TD or GTFO?
Yeah, TD,
you know?
Or GTFO, yeah. And hey, we're all guilty of it,
yeah,
for sure,
absolutely.
Us included. And it's just one of those things where, you know, you get a lot of legacy code, and it's, yep, really hard to change things, right? Yeah, I think I've been trying to focus on it more lately, and it's really not that bad. It,
no.
It really goes back to, you really need to question why you're doing certain things. Mm-hmm. And I think if you really strip stuff out, you start to see how much a lot of that old stuff doesn't really matter anymore. Things are improving, especially, I know Outlook.com used to be a big offender of a lot of, you know, headings and paragraph stylings and whatnot. But honestly, you can strip a ton of stuff out and the default styling is not too bad.
Yep.
So even if you are using, you know, you still have to use tables to an extent in email, you can still use semantic markup for headings, paragraphs, images. I think Mark Robbins is doing some great work on accessibility. You know, always make sure you're using role equals presentation. And yep. Definitely, I think we can start looking at the use of the Araya attribute more. So whether you're hiding certain things, whether you have duplicate content or whatnot. So I think there's a whole accessibility channel in Email Geek Slack now. So yep, definitely check out the Email Geek Slack if you don't. I think there's definitely more focus and attention towards it now, but I think you are right. Only really the people who are really looking into it are even interested now. It's definitely not a mass movement sort of focus currently.
Yeah, and I think this kind of goes hand in hand with the interactive point that you made, is there's not really a lot of like literature or case studies around the benefits or, you know, anything we can track as far as like interactive emails being more effective. And the same kind of goes for accessible emails, you know, for most people, for most audiences. The people with those disabilities that need those accessible emails is probably a very, very small percentage. Yeah. So there's not really good case studies. Stuff. There's more blog articles, especially in the web world, too. We can port that stuff over to email pretty easily. There's some really good studies. But as far as email is concerned, that literature just doesn't exist. So I think until we start seeing that, we can, you know, keep trying to educate people about it, keep talking about it as much as possible, push it in our own emails and what we're coding. But until people start seeing that kind of literature and those case studies to prove that it's really necessary, then it's probably not going to be a big movement or, you know, a big paradigm shift, which is unfortunate.
It's tough for us, too, because, you know, we're visual products and we have designers and developers are a very big part of our audience. So, yep. even in, for people like us who want to focus in on it, we don't necessarily have an audience for it because of what our product is.
Yep.
So yeah, it's tough, but it's
tricky.
It's tricky, but I think it can definitely, especially if you're a large brand, can definitely improve the effectiveness of your campaigns. So I want to switch gears and sort of get into some rendering predictions a little bit. Sure. I'm going to kick it off with Gmail. So I think Gmail definitely came in with the shock of 2016 with updating their rendering. That was definitely the biggest shock. So my guess is this year is they did a great job with the rendering updates, but there are a few situations that lag behind. And so I'm going to predict that with the big updates that they had last year, that the fragmentation that currently exists in which POP and IMAP accounts do not support the update and a few other edge cases, that those will still exist in Gmail and that the Gmail rendering will still be fragmented in that sense and will not have true 100% support for embedded CSS and media queries and whatnot. It'll still be dependent upon what type of account you're using in Gmail and the rendering that you're getting. So that's my prediction, is that they just did a big overhaul and there's some edge cases that don't support it, but I don't foresee them making any changes on that end.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, I think I can't read the team's minds, but I get the sense that they feel like they did a good job with releasing this latest change in their rendering engine, which they absolutely did. But I feel like they're probably going to, you know, rest on their laurels from that change and not really update anything moving forward for quite a while. This is something I could even see, you know, it's taken this long, how many years for them to get some of the support that we've been clamoring for. So I could see them just sort of sitting on this update for the next couple of years even, and not doing any real updates to the rendering engine. Which we'll see how it goes. That fragmentation definitely sucks a little bit. But it's weird because the improvements they made are pretty massive. You know, it's definitely affecting how we think about our emails and go about coding our own emails. So it's huge, and we should definitely give them props for making those changes. But I'm hoping they don't just, you know, sit on their hands and don't change anything after the fact.
I mean, they've definitely set the standard when it comes to webmail rendering.
Totally. So we'll see what happens with Gmail. The other big one was, the other big announcement from 2016 was this Litmus and Microsoft partnership to improve the Outlook email clients. So this one, I'm making the prediction that we are going to see some pretty important changes to Outlook. It's been, we kind of knew going into this that it was going to be kind of slow going because Microsoft's a very large organization. There's a lot of people working on a lot of different versions of Outlook. So we kind of knew that it would be slow going getting some of these changes in there. But we've had tons of feedback from the community, tons of people, you know, sending in those bug reports, and we've been triaging those and sent them along to Outlook, you know. So I think 2017 will be the year where we see some of those major changes making their way into the Outlook email clients, which will be awesome.
Yeah, we're a bit limited as to what we can say based on our sort of NDA and whatnot. But I guess we can just sort of throw that generic statement out there that, you know, important changes as to how, you know, emails will sort of be built, maybe. We're hopeful that there's going to be important changes that are coming out of this partnership that we'll be able to share soon. So, we predict really positive things from that partnership this year.
So do you think we're going to see any new email clients this year, Kevin? Any significant ones, I guess? There's always random apps popping up and stuff.
This is a great question. You know, I think the landscape is pretty set in stone, right? I mean, obviously, we always know Microsoft, Google, and Apple sort of own it at the top. I mean, apart from the usual updates from Apple, I don't really see anything significant dropping from like new stuff. Mm-hmm. I really don't see Microsoft doing anything. They're on the new Windows 10 OS. So anything on the subsequent OS, it's always going to be that client that gets the update. So I don't think anything new is coming from Microsoft, which is really good. And then, I mean, everything else is, like you said, sort of edge case.
Yeah.
I think the one thing maybe to look out for, it won't be anything new, but with the whole Yahoo and AOL being under the same umbrella now, if there's any shakeup there in terms of do they kill one or focus on one. Hopefully it'd be AOL. It'd be great if it was AOL.
Yeah.
But Yahoo has more usage based on our analytics, so I don't know. But that's sort of my thought, is that everything's pretty much set in stone at the moment, and I don't think we should see any massive shakeups on anything new or sort of, you know, market share impacting moves. I just don't really see that happening.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think for a while now we've been kind of set in stone, and everybody sort of has their place and has been, you know, living in their little zone. I feel like for a couple of years there were a couple of major, not major clients, but bigger clients that got a lot of press, and, you know, like Sparrow and, God, what were the other ones? There were a couple that were killed off or bought up by other companies, you know? So we saw that for a while, but I think that kind of land rush for the new improved email client is seeing its end here. We're still seeing a couple of companies trying to take that on. You know, there's like Nihilus trying to take that on desktop. People essentially building like better interfaces for Gmail for all intents and purposes. But I don't think any of those is going to have like a real impact on email client market share. I think one thing we might have to worry about, though, is this is something we've been focusing on at Litmus a lot lately, is expanding into more international markets and including those email clients. Mm-hmm. So I think traditionally we've been a very U.S. and Western Hemisphere focused when it comes to email clients, which is a huge amount of the market share, obviously. But I think we're definitely going to have to start accounting more and more for some of these bigger email clients that happen to be more localized to different countries or different regions of the world. So your mail.rus, you know, the German webmail clients, things like that are things we're going to have to, they might not have massive market share like Gmail or iPhone or anything like that, but a lot of people notice them being very big in their own audiences. So we'll have to start accounting for those things a little bit more too.
Yeah. I'm interested to see how that shakes out too. I mean, with sort of the killing of, you know, Windows Live Mail per se, mm-hmm. I'm expecting to see the bottom end of our market share to see some different players. So maybe that will happen. In terms of how market share might be impacted, I'm actually predicting that Outlook desktop, so the desktop apps of Outlook, you know, it's sort of always been very slowly trending downward. And one of my predictions, I think it was last year, was, oh, it's going to drop down below 5% because it actually made a few percentage points dropped. It didn't. It's at 6% right now. But I'm going to stick with that prediction that this year they'll finally get down to 5% for the desktop, simply because I see the majority of their core business trying to push to the you know, Office 365, Outlook.com, and getting everybody into the cloud. That's where I really see their business model transitioning to. And so they really want to move people off of their desktop app. So I'm going to stick with that prediction, Jason. I think this might be the year that we actually see Outlook desktop drop below 5% of the total market share.
I totally agree. I think this is going to happen this year too. It doesn't have far to go. And like you said, you know, they're trying to push people in, corral them into this newer service and get everybody on board for Office 365 and those types of products. So I definitely think we'll see Outlook desktop drop below 5%. And that's kind of industry-wide. You're still going to have a lot of people on those legacy clients, and especially if you're, you know, B2B or I would suspect like in the financial industries or something like that, you're still going to have to account for those older versions of Outlook on desktop, but overall we'll definitely see it drop below 5%, which will be cool.
And one of my more bold predictions, I think, I'm just going to go out on a limb here. So we've seen Gmail over the past couple of years, since they enabled images by default, that the Gmail market share, obviously when you do that, your recorded opens are going to skyrocket based on analytics, and it has. So we've seen Gmail drastically go up, and now granted we can't differentiate between webmail and mobile right now because of the image caching, but we've seen this go up, and it's all the way up to 19% now when it was just, you know, single digits, I think, 2 years ago. So my prediction is that it's going to make a big jump this year and go all the way up to 25%. And I'm basing that just off the trend and the increase or rise that we've seen. Android is far outpacing iOS in terms of growth. And so I'm adding that on top of it. And I just think it's sort of a market correction based on, we know Gmail is probably somewhat underrepresented, underrepresented from opens. So I just sort of think it's a correction. And that's where I think our analytics are going to show Gmail by the end of the year up at 25%.
This is where I'm going to disagree with you. I think that is definitely a very aggressive mark for them to hit, because it's around 19% now. I feel like it's going to level off a little bit lower than that, maybe around, 22%, somewhere around there, which is still, a huge player. We know Gmail is a huge player in the industry. But like we were saying before, I feel like a lot of these large players are kind of hitting their stride, and they all have their kind of zone worked out in the client share. And I don't think it's going to grow as aggressively as you think. But I may be surprised, we'll never see. We'll have to keep an eye
on it. You know what I'm interested in, actually? I'm interested to know if there is a large contingency of users that are actually using sort of the non-Gmail accounts, because they have that functionality now where you could be using Outlook.com or sure. Yahoo.com, AOL.com. I wonder how much of those Gmail opens are actually from those types of accounts. And you can actually use Litmus Analytics to figure that out. I know we did it for ours to figure out, okay, well, how much of that audience is being affected by the rendering update, or it wasn't necessarily. And ours was practically non-existent, but that's not to say that other people, especially probably more a consumer brand, doesn't have a large audience. So
yeah,
I do wonder, because if people are using Gmail in that way, that will also add to an increase in Gmail opens.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Yeah, I think there's just a lot of these little quirks about actually tracking Gmail usage. Yeah.
I do suspect that's. I suspect it is small, though. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll see. You're going aggressive with Gmail. I'm staying a little bit conservative, but I guess we'll see at the end of the year. We'll have to do a, late December roundup of our predictions, see what was right, what was wrong. All right, before we get into any other predictions, we'll take a quick break and remind everybody to check out all of our episodes at emaildesignpodcast.com. You can browse through your old episodes, check out all of the show notes and the links to everything we talk about there. You can also follow along on Twitter with the hashtag emaildesignpodcast. And if you're liable to subscribe to podcasts, you should do it on SoundCloud, iTunes, or YouTube now. We post all of our stuff to YouTube as well, so you can check out the Email Design Podcast there. And also, be sure to check out a free trial of Litmus, 14-day free trial, by going to litmus.com/giftcard and using the coupon code podcast. And that'll get you access to testing in over 60 different email clients. So the big hitters, some of the more niche type email clients as well. Some of those international clients who've been working in our tools more and more, as well as test out things like Builder, Analytics, all of our tools, and give them a 14-day free trial, which is really, really awesome. Speaking of Builder and workflows and stuff is our next kind of topic of trends, Kevin. So what do you think we'll see from a workflow and kind of tooling perspective in the next year?
So I definitely think, based on all of my conversations and sort of seeing the reaction from the community, that the majority of emails will continue to have inline CSS despite the Gmail rendering update that essentially brings support for embedded CSS to, if you're looking at it from a global market share perspective, 95%, 99%, depends on how you want to, what margin of error you want to put there. But basically, almost all email clients support embedded CSS now, the exceptions being mostly international webmails. There is the Gmail, non-Gmail account on Gmail app, and then essentially international webmails. So if you do have a large international audience and that's where you're based, obviously that's not something I would recommend. But I think there's definitely this debate to be had. Should you inline your CSS or not now, depending on your audience? I know for our latest newsletter, and I actually did a little community thread on this in the Litmus community, we did not inline our CSS for the latest Litmus newsletter because our audience is just so small. We essentially have a non-existent audience who opens on any of the international webmails. And the same for the non-Gmail accounts using the Gmail app. We actually ran our own analytics, and we were seeing like, less than 50 people per newsletter send, which is hundreds of thousands of people.
Yeah.
Opening. So For us and our audience, it just doesn't really make sense when you think about sort of the organization maintainability and the progressive enhancements it provides. But I just sort of think based on the reaction, people are hesitant to do it because they're a little resistant to change and they kind of want to feel it out a little bit and sort of just keep things as it's been for a little bit.
Yeah, I definitely agree with this prediction too. I think it's very much a case-by-case determination everybody has to make.
Yeah, definitely.
Because everybody's audience is their own, and we can look at our audience and know that, you know, it's something we probably don't need to worry about too much. And we have the added benefit of being in a position where we're kind of expected to push the envelope a little bit and try out new things and experiment with our coding techniques. So that definitely helps us make that decision that we can comfortably stop inlining CSS and run a few experiments and see how that works out, you know, and I think it's going to work out really, really well. But for a lot of people, they might have to worry about those smaller clients or those international clients that don't understand embedded CSS, and they're going to have to rely on inlining now. For a while at least. And I think a lot of it too is just that kind of pervasive attitude amongst the industry that a lot of people seem afraid to try new things because it's I feel like email coding has always been wildly conservative because we're so used to email clients screwing up the smallest things in our code. So it's very much that defensive design mentality, and people aren't liable to overcome that fear anytime soon. But definitely breaks down to your audience, knowing your audience and seeing what you can get away with. I'm kind of curious, you know, how did you think that the non-inline CSS actual workflow went for you this time around? I know it was the first time you did it on this massive scale. Did you see a decrease in build time or any real good advantages moving over to that?
Well, I'm sort of in the process of building out, I guess, a new framework along with it. So I don't know that it saved me time for this particular build, but down the road, it certainly will. I mean, I personally loved it. It just makes everything so clean. It minimizes potential mistakes because you're pointing everything all to the same place. You can't be using the same workflow with CSS inlining and then just not use CSS inlining and not automate it. But I would say it's I think there's just a lot more consideration to really make this workflow sound, just because you do sort of need to rely on Outlook fallbacks. I mean, I guess a part of it is it not only was I not inlining CSS, I was also trying not to use tables. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to use as few tables as possible, which is just really hard with the Word rendering engine. So yeah. That was actually a little bit tougher than I thought it was going to be. I had to sort of duplicate more than I wanted to just for Outlook. So I need to figure out better ways around that potentially. But I mean, in terms of just the readability standpoint, when you're going through your email and you just you don't see anything in line, it's really, really nice. Great. Yeah, it's very nice. And I think it's I mean, a big motivation for us, Jason, is I'm trying to empower other people on the team to build emails. I mean, this is a minority focus for me now. I don't really do that much email at Litmus anymore. And so I'm just trying to re-architect things to get everybody on the same page and get more people involved in the actual development of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, using embedded CSS and, you know, that it's that whole update once and it proliferates across all of the different elements of the email is a huge advantage there. But combining that with like snippets and partials and stuff is going to be really, really good for.
Yeah, very, 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 very powerful.
Yeah, that's cool. All right, my next prediction is actually I think we're going to see a proliferation of new email frameworks and workflows. So this is something we've been talking about quite a bit on the podcast, just looking at all these different frameworks, these starter templates, these different workflow tools that are out there. And I think that we're hitting a point where more and more people are taking email seriously, especially in the web design development community. And if there's one thing the web design development community loves, it's workflows and frameworks and building your own. So I think we're going to see a huge influx of things similar to, you know, in the past year, we've seen foundations for email 2 come out. We've seen things like the MJML framework. So I think we're going to see more and more of those types of tools. I'm really excited by things. You know, I mentioned the Rebel Mail API earlier. I would definitely lump that into this framework or workflow type tool. So I'm hoping more people release things around interactivity as well, or even, you know, tools to help make emails more accessible and kind of automate that process or guide you along those steps and have these boilerplates built in. But I think we're going to see a lot more stuff, a lot more GitHub repos and cool landing pages describing this fantastic new workflow for email designers. So I think that'll be cool to watch.
That's interesting. I think I personally would just like to see the continuation of Foundation for Email and MJML improved. Yeah. I think those are great frameworks. We don't necessarily need to, I guess, you know, why have everybody segmented out doing their own thing when everybody can just sort of contribute to one and make it awesome? But I think from my perspective, I think I'm definitely more interested in seeing what people do around the templating languages themselves, because that's a big part of it, right? Obviously, the rendering under the hood is the rendering under the hood, but what improvements can be made to the actual templating languages to make it easier for people? Especially as we start to introduce, like you said, these interactive components. And I know MJML just had an interactive module they just released not too long ago. So, you know, how do we make these things as simple as possible to manage and deal with from on the abstracted layer? To me, if people are starting to do work in this area, I think I'd like to see more of a focus there than compared to creating this entirely new grunt or gulp type based workflow when there's already so many things out there.
I definitely agree. I would love to see that kind of simplification and kind of doubling down on a few major players. But I think this trend, I'm kind of taking cues from the web world and especially the JavaScript world, you know, where everybody and their brother has their own framework or their own library out there. They're all competing. It's very noisy. And I think that's the trend that we're going to actually see. But I think from that, some cool things will probably come out of it, some things that we haven't necessarily thought of. So hopefully those can be incorporated into things like Foundation or MJML and make those things better, which would be really, really cool.
Yeah. And I think related to this and sort of stemming from this talk of frameworks, workflows, I am actually interested in seeing how task runners are adopted this year. So when we did our state of email production survey last year, which you have not, if you have not read that, you absolutely need to go look that up. State of email, 2016 state of email production survey by Litmus, amazing data. And by the way, the 2017 survey is open right now. So definitely, yep, we mentioned this on previous podcasts. Definitely please be a part of that. It's so helpful. But I'm actually interested to see what the task runners part do. And what was it? It was like 7% of people were using task runners to automate their workflow. And I think with the proliferation of these workflows now and with tools like Builder making these tasks more accessible and available to non-technical people, we're actually going to see an increase in the adoption of task runners. So I actually think task runners are going to go above 10% of the market. And so maybe this won't necessarily be reflected in the results we get from this year's survey, Jason, but by the time next year ends, I definitely expect it to be above 10%. And I definitely expect that to be a part of a norm of people's workflow where they're not doing everything by hand. So whether they're automating their inlining or they're starting to use partials or whatever it might be, I'm expecting to see a lot more automation in the dev workflow side of things.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think this will be a huge, huge benefit for anybody that starts understanding task runners, especially things that partials are, you know, so powerful and so good to have built into your workflow, that I think people are finally understanding that and getting up and running with them. I feel like traditional task runners like grunt and gulp and stuff are a little bit intimidating to get comfortable with if you're not used to it or you don't come from that kind of development background. But even using Litmus Builder is essentially a giant task runner that manages that stuff for you. So people are going to start understanding these features a little bit more, seeing how it improves their workflow sometimes in a in a huge amount, you know, and we'll see more people adopting those as people talk about them and kind of spread the good word around Task Runner. So I think we're probably going to see it over 10% as well.
And I mean, we're starting to see it even in like drag and drop tools, right? Mm-hmm. You're just starting to see things like partials being baked into those types of tools. So I just think, and maybe it's even going to be one of those things where people will be using it and they don't even realize it. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I just expect that to just be a big trend to where people are going to be, more of them are going to be using it, but I think more of them are going to be aware that they're using it as well.
Sure.
And I think a part of that too is, again, there's just going to be more adoption of these drag and drop WYSIWYG type of editors. There's just so many out there and they're starting to get really, really good. Mm-hmm. They're really starting to help people in their workflow and empower non-technical people to build email and sort of take time off of the developers' plates that where they're not really needed, right? If you're just building out basic things. And so I actually expect to see a shift in the market share. I expect to see a dip in editor percentage. I expect editor percentage to go down compared to drag and drop editors. Editor percentage will still be the majority. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I expect drag and drop to increase. And amongst the editors, I just see so many different editors being in the market now that I see the number one front runner, Dreamweaver, I actually see them dropping below 50%. So they're at 59% based on our survey last year. I think by the end of this year, and when we take the survey again, I actually think their market share is going to drop down to be below 50% because there's just so much fragmentation happening now in terms of how you can build your email.
Yeah, this one I'm kind of on the fence about because people friggin' love Dreamweaver. Email people do not want to let go of Dreamweaver, even though there might be some better tools out there. Cough, Litmus Builder. But
I think a big part of it too, just anecdotally here, but because everything is just baked into the Adobe Cloud subscription, which is such an amazing business model move at their standpoint, it's just hard to give up to justify other tools, right? So
Totally. But I think a lot of that driving it is I get the feeling that more and more web designers and developers are taking email seriously. And not to knock Dreamweaver too much, but if you're, you know, if web development, modern web development's like your bread and butter, then chances are you're probably not still using Dreamweaver. You're using something like Sublime Text or Atom or Visual Studio Code or a tool like that, you know. So I think more people that are touching on email on a more frequent basis are probably using those types of editors. And, you know, we've seen a lot of people kind of jump and ship to Litmus Builder too. So I think these are definitely going to kind of take a chunk out of that. But like you said, I think one of the key points is that these drag and drop tools, some of these WYSIWYG editors are getting so good that more of the people that say their job is building email might not be those technical people that are touching the code, but they're still using these different tools to build those different email campaigns. So that's going to cut into that a lot too, which I think is awesome. I feel like that's my wild card new prediction that we didn't even have on our Google Doc be as a bullet point, you know, but I think we're going to see more people empowered to build email campaigns that wouldn't call themselves necessarily designers or developers because these tools are getting so good and much more simplified, which I think is going to be really, really cool. I've always said, you know, once we get the coding stuff down and like frameworks and templates and all that down, a lot of people fear from like a developer standpoint that, oh, my job's gone, you know, like if email's a solved problem, like what good am I? You're still gonna have a job, you know, but it'll allow more people to focus on what's really important in email, which isn't necessarily the development or the design or the underlying code. We need to make those things good, sure. But it's really about the content and the value that you can actually deliver to your subscribers. So when we see these tools making it easier for more people to jump into email and take it more seriously, they can focus a lot more on the content of the emails, the value of the emails, you know, delivering the right message at the right time for their subscribers, which I think is going to be awesome. So I think we're going to see that in 2017 too. That's my kind of last wild card.
I love it. Yeah. I mean, you can't be afraid. If you're really good at your job, you know that it's about the message, right? It's not about, don't fall. And I don't think I say this enough, but don't fall in love with the hacks. And I mean, listen, there is fun for us. We enjoy it. It's a different kind of challenge, But don't fall in love with it, because that's not what it's about at the end of the day, right? Mm-hmm. It's about the message and what type of strategy can you bring from a design standpoint, really? What type of experience can you design?
Yep.
Those are the people that can stand out in the inbox. Not, I mean, today you definitely have a leg up if you know how to develop and do all those things. But in a few years, man, it's not going to be like that anymore.
Yeah.
So that's a great way to end the podcast right there, Jason.
Nice. Love it. Right, love it.
All right. So those are our predictions for 2017. I mean, who knows what's going to happen? I mean, it's so hard to pick certain areas to focus on. But hey, we just threw everything against the wall. We'll see what sticks. So that's going to do it for this edition of the Email Design Podcast. Reminder, emaildesignpodcast.com. Full show notes and links there. Subscribe to the podcast on YouTube, SoundCloud, iTunes. Leave us a nice review on iTunes. Tweet along with the hashtag Email Design Podcast. And don't forget, a free 14-day trial of Litmus so you can make sure your email campaigns look great before they go out the door. Check them in all 50 different email clients. Litmus.com/gift card and put coupon code podcast. All right, until next time, email geeks, keep your table cells aligned, and well, I don't know if your style should still be in line or not, but I guess we'll see you.